6 seconds left. Halla gets it up top. Marchessault to the right. Big shot! Score! Shea Theodore! Vegas takes the lead 4-3! 2.3 to go! Perron to the circle. He shoots and scores! David Perron wins it! Up top for Kopitar. Feet to the right. Shot! Stopped by Fleury!
Shea Theodore is fourth and a huge hit by McNabb. He leveled Arvidsson. Wow.
Here's Howell into the zone. Howell left side, drop pass, big shot, score! It's John Merrill! Merrill puts Vegas on top, 2-1!
And welcome into the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a game day. Game number 53, your Golden Knights coming in 35-13-4, 74 points on the ledger, high atop the Western Conference against the Pittsburgh Penguins, 29-22-3, 61 points, third in the Metropolitan Division. Clayton Hamilton along with Frank Harnish out here at Born and Raised on Warm Springs and Cimarron. Come on out, enjoy the rest of the day with us. Cut out of work early because it's a pretty big game, Frank. Marc-Andre Fleury and the triumphant return to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, going to be a little bit emotional there, but I know Marc-Andre Fleury's looking forward to it. Probably looking forward to getting it over with as well, because Mark doesn't necessarily like the spotlight there, but it's going to be a big game tonight. Pittsburgh playing very well at home of late on a 7-game home winning streak, so we'll see if the Golden Knights can snap that, but it is a big night. Later on, 4 o'clock, remember, early start. So like you said, sneak out of work a little bit early. Come and join us, 3:30 with the pregame show here. And we're out here in the patio at Born and Rage. And the sun gods have been kind to you recently.
They have. The sun finally dipped behind the roof, and I can see again, which is a fantastic big show today. We're going to meet up with Jason Mackey from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, who's been pretty busy covering this story. Later we're going to hear from Kerry Buchholz as well. And we're going to learn about a coach that turned into a hero in the river one day. So that'll be a fun show to get to. But right now we will go out to Pittsburgh to PPG Paints Arena and welcome in a friend of the program, Jason Mackey, who writes for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, follows these Penguins wherever they go. Welcome, Jason.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
It's always good to talk to you. I can imagine, just given the photos that we've seen, that Marc-Andre Fleury's arrival in town was a big story.
Yeah, a few people noticed, I think. we're almost at the point where, you know, I'm glad the game is tonight, because it's just been such a huge deal, you know, ever since Sunday. I know myself and another reporter talked to Mark on the phone, and, you know, people are gobbling that stuff up. And then with the Knights practicing here yesterday, you know, it was Fleury Fest, and it'll be so again tonight. But I think it does just speak to how much this city really loved the guy. I know I've been on with you guys before talking about, you know, just take care of him, and we're glad that he's doing well out there. He truly is one of the few guys, in my opinion, that sort of makes it difficult for reporters. You're supposed to be objective or whatever, but he's just such a good person that it's hard not to root for the guy.
We're certainly glad to have you with us, Jason, for the Vegas Golden Knights, a pregame preview brought to you by Raikman Plumbing and Air Conditioning, where a flush beats a full house every time. And, Frank, let's get right on into it. Marc-Andre Fleury, number one storyline of the night.
Yeah, certainly the number one storyline of the night. How this is not on NBC or NBC Sports or whatever just amazes me, but they make this stuff up ahead of time. You would think that they would have known that this was going to be a big night, but regardless, we get to see it. Jason, I know you're going to be there seeing it. Now, I know the Golden Knights do a lot of different special things before games and different things. We hear that they're going to be doing something special for Marc-Andre Fleury yet. Have they let you guys know any of that stuff, or are they keeping that kind of secret and then kind of say, you'll see it when you see it, but everybody's going to be impressed and amazed by it?
Yeah, I mean, the Penguins have a pretty hard precedent as far as how they honor former players, and Mark's going to be treated the same way. They always do it at the first media timeout. I know I inquired just based on what Toronto did, or San Jose did rather, with Patrick Marleau, and doing something pregame, that, you know, are you guys going to adjust and do this pregame instead because of the interest? And they said, no, we always do first TV timeout. So that's what we're going to see. As far as, you know, anything going on, I mean, it's not, they don't really do pregame presentations. They're going to do a tribute video. And what's going to be interesting to see is, you know, the bigger players, get pretty substantial standing ovations. Like Matt Cullen came back a couple weeks ago, and you know, the place went crazy for him. But Marc-Andre is obviously on a completely different level. They might honestly be restarting the game out of the first TV timeout to a standing ovation because they just can't wait it out. Like, I don't anticipate fans in Pittsburgh sitting down for a long, long time. They love Flower, like I was saying before. And, you know, tickets are going for just astronomical prices here just for people to be a part of it and that ovation. So it could be a while. It could be kind of funky there.
Now, you mentioned the fact how much they love him there. They certainly love Marc-Andre Fleury out here in Las Vegas. People that have been hockey fans forever and all the new people that are jumping on board and just realizing what a great game this is. But can you describe to the people out here that maybe don't know the whole Marc-Andre Fleury story and everything back there exactly what he does mean to that community? Because, yes, we know about the three Stanley Cups and other things, but this guy helped build playgrounds. He did a lot of community work. He's done a lot of things there. I mean, he was so much more than a hockey player out there. Wasn't the face of the franchise like he is in Vegas when you have guys like Malkin and Crosby around, but still just a beloved character and somebody that will always be part of Pittsburgh's landscape.
Right. Yeah, I'll jump around and hit on a few things there, but one of my favorite Fleury stories is that playground that you mentioned, and also sort of how that came about. I did a story on that, the emotions tied up in Fleury with the team, and I found out that a year prior to him leaving, he basically saw the writing on the wall with Matt Murray. He said, you know, I know this is going to be my last year. I want to do something that stays around a while longer than me and specifically is done for kids. And he approached a woman named Jen Villano, who does the Penguins PR. And they, you know, one, Jen told a great story how she's like, I am not talking about this right now. I'm going to cry. We're not doing it. And Flower was insistent that they do it. And so they sort of hashed out plans for this playground. And then they built it. And what, 2 days or a day before the expansion draft, he dedicates this thing, and that was not out of the norm for him and his wife, Jeremy. They did all kinds of stuff, you know, clothing drives and any sort of charitable thing they could do in the community, they did. It was really amazing, and I also thought one thing that was really neat about Fleury, you mentioned him not being a face, but, I mean, people loved him and knew him here, but you also sort of respected his privacy. I don't know how many times I heard stories from readers about, hey, man, I saw Flower at this, like, breakfast spot. He was coming in and picking up breakfast for his wife and two girls. Or, you know, Flower and his family were out to eat at blank and blank restaurant. And, you know, nobody bothered him, but he was just, like, playing the whole time with his daughters and goofing off. And so you hear a lot of that stuff. And honestly, he was the only one I ever heard about.
Yeah, and just a great guy, and certainly it's going to be emotional tonight. And how is Pittsburgh and their players? Because I know that a lot of players have said a lot of different things about Flower, and I'm sure Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin are going to be emotional about it. But will there be a more emotional guy on the team than the goalie at the other end of the ice with Matt Murray?
Actually, yes. Not to disagree with the premise of your question, but Crosby and Letang were really, really close. Fleury and Crosby especially. I remember coming out to your place for the expansion draft and seeing Crosby's face and his answers and all that stuff. When I don't know if that was like the first time maybe it felt real for Sid, like maybe he was holding out hope that it wouldn't happen, Vegas wouldn't take him, he'd keep Fleury. But, you know, those two, every chartered flight, sat next to each other, played video games or whatever. You know, Fleury and Letang, their families were close, along with Pascal Dupuis, all being, you know, French Canadian, their kids hung out together. So, I mean, honestly, you know, I'm sure Matt will be emotional, but it was Crosby and Letang who were the closest. I can speak to Murray's situation, though, from, I mean, myself at the Post Gazette. Like, I replaced a guy named Dave Molinari, who won the Elmer Ferguson Awards in the Hockey Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest hockey writers ever. And, like, stepping into somebody's shoes like that, it's not easy. And, you know, Murray loved Fleury because he just didn't hate him. You know, he gave him the time of day. He was fair to him. He was beyond fair. He handed him the cup first and treated him really, really well. And I think Matt is envious of Marc-Andre for that reason, that he's had such a long career. So many people love him. He's done so many things, and Matt's just starting out. But I know that Murray has such a tremendous amount of respect for Fleury. He's just, half the time, he's in awe of him.
Beyond the return of Marc-Andre Fleury, this is a pretty big game for both squads. Pittsburgh starting to play a lot better since, you know, all through January and the start of February. Had a really big win against Washington on Friday. Minor setback Saturday, second night of a back-to-back in New Jersey. But a couple of injuries of note. Patrick Hornquist, Connor Sheary is out. How is the how's the team's mood with those guys and the lineup changes in the chemistry?
Well, couple different things there too, but you know, Sherry's gonna, he skated this morning on his own. He's gonna be back relatively soon. Not that you want to lose a guy for an injury, but if we're comparing Sherry to Hornquist, Hornquist is a much, much bigger deal. It's sort of an underrated storyline with this team, how much they feed off Hornquist. He's absolutely nuts, and I mean that in a good way. You know, on the bench, screaming, banging things. There's an intensity level there with Hornquist that they miss. Hockey-wise, I wouldn't be surprised to see Evgeny Malkin and Phil Kessel put back together and Mike Sullivan kind of putting all of his eggs in the top six basket. We've seen a couple guys, Tom Thunhackle, Zach Aston-Reese, get chances to fill those skates, but it just hasn't gone terribly well. I'm not sure they have the offense there in their games. And as far as the Penguins right now, you mentioned the game in Newark on Saturday, a 3-1 loss. It was pretty brutal, honestly. And the thing that has gone right for the Penguins, since 2018, they've had a couple like mediocre to bad games, but they've bounced back really quickly. So that's what I'm looking for out of this team, this loss. If they're able to put it behind them, come back, have a good performance, it's no big deal. If they have two clunkers in a row, then, you know, maybe you start to question some things. But lately, this team has been on quite a roll, and it's been pretty resilient as far as bouncing back.
They've won seven straight games at home in Pittsburgh there, and Crosby and Kessel both have seven-game scoring streaks in those home games. Crosby with 2 goals, 12 assists, 14 points. Kessel, 5 goals, 10 assists, and 15 points. But is anybody right now hotter than Evgeny Malkin, who's on a three-game home scoring streak of his own, but also had three straight multi-goal games until that game on Saturday against New Jersey?
No. I mean, Gino is just on another planet right now with how much he's scoring. And, you know, it's ability one, but he's also getting a tremendous amount of puck luck. I think in Washington, one of his goals came off a defenseman's skate, but I'm also a believer that you have to make your own luck sometimes, and he's been doing it. One thing that's been going on with him is it was a little different Saturday. He's been playing on a line with Carl Hagelin and Patrick Hornquist, and the line is actually really, really clicked, excuse me. And one of the reasons, Mike Sullivan sort of sat Gino down and said, hey, you are the scorer on this line. You are the shooter. You need to shoot the puck. And Malkin has heeded that advice. He shot it a lot. He's been very authoritative. When Malkin does that, I mean, I don't have to tell you guys how good of a player he is, but I think when he and Kessel were together earlier in the year, they got caught up in a little bit of overpass, and I'll be interested to see how that plays out tonight. But Malkin's just been tremendous. You mentioned some of those home scoring streaks, and I believe the Penguins can win their eighth in a row at home. That is their longest streak since like 2013, 2014, something like that. But I say all that to say they've been really good at home lately. Some of their best games, honestly, have been at PPG Paints Arena.
Yeah, and when we're talking about Pittsburgh, it's kind of funny because it seems like just a couple, 3 weeks ago when people were talking about this team maybe not making the playoffs after back-to-back Stanley Cups and what were the playoffs going to be like without the Penguins and the Blackhawks and some of the perennial teams that are there all the time. Now you look at the standings and all of a sudden they're in third place in the Metropolitan, and although they've played two more games than Washington, they're only 4 games behind Washington, and now you start thinking about not if they can make the playoffs, but where could they potentially finish in the Metropolitan. They might have home ice in a series or two.
Yeah, seriously. And it's funny how the Penguins aren't tired anymore. You know, a couple weeks ago, everybody was saying the Penguins, oh, they've just played so much hockey and they're worn out. You know, I think there's some validity to that in the sense that there was probably a bit of an interest problem early on or a motivation problem, but they're not tired. They're getting, you know, they're ramping it up right now. I think they sort of, around New Year's Day, they took a look at where they were in standings and said, all right, boys, we've probably got to get this into gear. But, you know, they're playing the way we've seen them play the past 2 years. And you know, if they do it tonight, you'll notice that puck out of their zone quickly. They're relentless on the forecheck. They create a lot of turnovers. They're blocking some shots. And the most simple thing, really, guys, is their stars being their stars. And, you know, when Crosby's going, Kessel's going, Malkin's going, and these guys are putting up the numbers that they are, you know, it's not bragging or anything like that, but few teams can hang with them. They should be where they are. They should be even higher up in the standings, and I do think they will be there before it's all said and done. You know, I think Tampa may be better than them in the East, but as far as that, I'm not sure I'd put a team ahead of the Penguins right now in the Eastern Conference.
The Penguins certainly have been fortunate with the amount of stars that they've been able to generate through their system or guys they've been able to bring over from Europe. And we did see one of the top prospects, Zach Aston-Reese, he debuted on Saturday. Boy, that was easy for me to say, huh? What did you see out of him?
Yeah, Zach Aston-Reese, it does trip you up sometimes. So don't feel bad about that. The debut Saturday, it's a mouthful, but... Aston-Reese is a kid that they signed out of college. He was a Hobey Baker Award finalist. Whenever the Penguins got him, there were a lot of comparisons to Hornquist, saying he plays this sort of net front game, simple, blue-collar, relentless, goes in the corners. And we've seen some of that, not enough of that. I think he is sort of still getting his feet wet. I think he played like 6 minutes and change something Saturday. Not a ton. Started on the fourth line, got some shifts with Sid. Probably see him on the third or fourth line tonight. I think that's kind of how they think of him. What Aston-Reese needs to do more of, and I'm not sure he's quite ready for this at the NHL level, is to be physical, to use his size. I've seen the kid fight a few times. It was actually at a rookie tournament, and I know this isn't like an actual hockey thing, but he's a tough kid. He's a very tough kid. He's strong, and he can battle and create turnovers. It's just I think he's a little bit too timid right now doing that. I don't know, maybe that changes, but that's the type of player that when he's at his best, that's what he looks like.
When it comes to tonight's game against Vegas, it's not the first time that these two teams have met up with each other, so there is some familiarity. But does that first game, since it was a while ago, does that mean anything going into tonight's game, or is tonight just a completely different scenario with two teams that have improved or are a little bit different maybe than they were earlier on in the season?
Yeah, from a team standpoint, I don't think it means a ton. You know, I remember before that game, I talked to Jim Rutherford, the GM of Pittsburgh, and he said, you know, if we don't start winning, there's going to be a big-time shakeup, and that's the sort of like dire straits the Penguins were in right then. You have the GM threatening trades. So Penguins are in a much different spot team-wise. I don't think there's a lot of stock to be put in it that way, but I do think the one thing that plays in the game tonight versus the game back in December is losing to Fleury. None of these guys want to lose to him. I mean, they love Flower, but, you know, nobody here wants to go 0-2 against Fleury, especially not the way they did. You know, they had some decent chances, and Fleury was really the best player on the ice, in my opinion. So I guarantee you that's in the back of a lot of Penguins players' minds. They just want to beat Fleury.
Jason Mackey from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joining us on the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio. And Jason, as you look towards the trade deadline and the question marks surrounding a lot of teams, what are your thoughts on what Pittsburgh is going to decide to do? Are they going to buy, going to sell, going to stand pat?
Yeah, it's tough right now. If I had to pick today what I think they would do, I think they would add Matt Cullen and call it a day. That could change. And basically the scenario they're weighing, and I wrote this today, is looking at their third-line center spot and trying to determine if Riley Sheahan is good enough. And it's a bit of a wild card right now because Sheahan earlier on, maybe 2 weeks ago, wasn't good enough. He wasn't producing enough offense. That line wasn't a scoring threat. But recently he started to develop a little bit of chemistry with Phil Kessel, and he started to sort of learn how to play with him, and the Penguins are contemplating, hey, are we just going to roll with it? You know, Sheahan might not be the offensive player that Bonino was. Not that Bonino was an offensive force, but he gave them a little bit more. You know, are they willing to live with that little bit of lack of offense to get what Sheahan brings in terms of penalty killing, faceoffs, comfortability, a good defensive player? So they're trying to weigh that right now. And you know, as we sit here today, I think that they would probably be okay taking Sheahan. And, you know, I've written before, too, the Matt Cullen situation is an interesting one to watch. He was a healthy scratch the other night. Things aren't going great in Minnesota. The Penguins love him. They could use a guy of his stature in their room. He would not be hard to acquire. So I think, you know, I talked to Jim Rutherford yesterday a little bit about this, but my take on it is that they would get Sheahan and then supplement their fourth line with Cullen, and that's probably it.
When it comes to the health of the Penguins right now? And you said that they're not a tired team, and they're certainly not playing like one. Is everybody healthy? And that I noticed you tweeted earlier today that Crosby, Malkin, Hagelin, Sheahan, Dumlin, Letang, Schultz, and Cole, none of them skated today, but it was a very optional skate. So was that just their choice to, like, we're going to get a little bit of rest tonight before tonight's game and everything, and they're just getting ready to go and probably getting their right mindset in?
That's it. We were joking this morning that the Penguins like to, when they practice the day before, they'll be optional with the morning skate the day of the game. And that group started out, the guys taking the option was, like, beginning of the season, maybe Crosby and Kessel. And it's grown. You know, Hagelin's taking his options. Malkin's taking his options. Dumoulin's the tank. They're all healthy. Not a big deal. It's just sort of the way the Penguins conduct business with playing so much hockey. They're just a lot of optional skates.
As we wind into the second half of the season and it starts to get late on the schedule, a lot of people are still waiting for the Golden Knights to fall off the top of the podium. They haven't played their best hockey as of late, but are still 3 out of 4 on this road trip. Have you had a chance to watch them much, and what do you think their concerns for the Golden Knights moving forward?
I will say this, guys. Every time I have a chance to watch some hockey and I can watch the Golden Knights, I love it. I love watching them. You know, not only because of Fleury either. It's just, in my opinion, Vegas plays the game the way it should be played. It's fun. It's an exciting system. I love Gerard Gallant's team in Florida when they had him. I still, for the life of me, don't know why Florida got rid of him, but that's an aside. You know, as far as what you would add, I don't know if I'd add anything, honestly. I mean, you guys have such a good thing going out there, and I would be afraid of adding something to disrupt team chemistry. I'd probably be worried about, you know, losing something because of the same reason, but I'm not expecting Vegas to fall off a cliff. To me, it's just how far can Vegas go, and you know, maybe if you find a way to get a supplemental score in your bottom two lines, maybe you feel better about that. But I really like what they have going right now, and I'm not sure I'd screw with it.
When it comes to tonight's game, is there any particular line that Pittsburgh is looking at tonight or focusing on? Or do they look at Vegas, like we see them out here a lot, as a team that can throw four lines out there and all of them are expected to do their job? Obviously, there's players like Neal and Perron that know the team very well. Marchessault, Carlson, and Smith are arguably one of the better lines in the entire NHL this year. But is there a focus, or it's just like, you know, we're going to do the matchups that we want because that's one of the advantages that home ice does have?
Yeah, you know what? Mike Sullivan he's not a traditional matchup guy. Like, a lot of teams will have a checking line that they want to throw out against another team's top line and shut it down. Sullivan isn't quite like that. I would not be surprised to see just him go Crosby against the Carlson line or something like that. You know, he is perfectly fine going best on best. And even that, they don't really specify. You know, it, like, doesn't have to be Crosby's line. It doesn't have to be Malkin's line. But the one thing from watching the Penguins a lot that I don't see them do is use their fourth line as a shutdown line. It was funny. I was actually talking to Ryan Reeves about this the other day, where, you know, he's gone through a little bit of stuff and a change coming here versus what he experienced in St. Louis, where he was on a line that was like the shutdown line, and now the fourth line is kind of left for everybody to scrap. You know, the Penguins don't use that as a shutdown line or a defense line. It's kind of a energy go out there. And honestly, last year and the last 2 years, that line has scored goals, but to your point, are they going to match anybody up? Not really. You'll see a lot of best on best for the Penguins.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jason. We certainly appreciate your time, and unfortunately, this is the end of the series between the Golden Knights and the Penguins, but perhaps you'll give us some time and we can catch up with you when the playoffs start.
Well, yeah. Aren't we going to see each other in the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah.
That was what I had penciled in.
That'd be great, because then we could be going, which three-peat is it going to be, the Penguins or Flowers?
Seriously. Either, if it gets me to Vegas in the playoffs, I would be thrilled. And I'll also say this, that if the Penguins go out early and you guys are still playing, I guarantee you the Post-Gazette sends me out there to cover Fleury. He's that loved.
Well,
so maybe we'll talk then.
You'll definitely have to sit in live with us on the show then if that happens.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. Jason Mackey of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. And like I said, if it does end up Pittsburgh and the Vegas Golden Knights in the Stanley Cup Finals, what a story he will have either way.
Yeah, and boy, somehow or other, if that does happen, they have got to mic up Marc-Andre Fleury for one of those games.
I would hope so. He's, like I said, you can hear him in the locker room, the interviews, a very quiet, oh shucks guy, but everyone says that's not the case out on the ice. I would love to hear him mic'd up as well. Well, when we come back, we're going to hear Kerry Buchholz. He's going to talk about his thoughts on Seattle and their bid to be the 32nd franchise in the NHL. Plus, we're going to go around the league and hear some stories of some heroics down in Florida. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back to Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a game day. VGK headed to Pittsburgh to play the Penguins. 3:30 pregame, we will have all of that for you right here on Fox Sports Radio. Frank Harnish, along with me, Clayton Hamilton, and then we'll have 4 o'clock puck drop. We'll be back for the intermission reports, postgame show as well, all from Born and Raised down on Warm Springs and Cimarron. So if you get out of work early, come on by, say hello, enjoy some food, enjoy some drink, enjoy the many, many large screen TVs here. The sound will be on for the game, so Golden Knights in the bar today.
Yeah, and if you're not getting out of work early, sneak out of work early. Get out down here. You want to see this. Again, we just had Jason Mackey on. You want to be here by that first TV timeout because they're going to be doing the tribute to Fleury and everything, and although it'll be a TV timeout, I'm sure they'll show something back from it, and you want to see the crowd and hear how loud they are, even though it'll be the tail end of the standing ovation. I think it might last a little bit into before they can drop the puck again because Marc-Andre Fleury, very, very loved in that community by the community, the former players, the coaching staff, the organization, everybody. They did not want to let this guy go.
No, not at all. This is one of the all-time greats returning to where he has made his living right there in Pittsburgh. A little bit of news, though, around the NHL. We will start in Ottawa, Frank, where Bobby Ryan is expected to miss 2 to 3 weeks because of a hand injury. Head Senators head coach Guy Boucher said, it's not a bone thing, it's a ligament thing, and you'd kind of rather it be the other way around because bones heal, ligaments sometimes don't.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because when people hear about that, when they hear broken bone, they think it's the worst thing in the world. But like you said, you kind of get them in the right place, you give them enough time, they come back together, you're out there, you're playing again, maybe with a cast or something like that, but there's ways to work around it. Ligaments, it can be dicey. You don't know, guys try to come back too soon, they re-injure it, they stretch something, they pull something more, or they overcompensate with some other part of their body, and then they injure themselves that way as well. Ligaments are trickier than bones, and that's what makes it sometimes a worse injury.
Mm-hmm. He's missed a number of games earlier this year because of a broken right index finger, but now facing the ligaments, and Guy Boucher said, you know, it could be weeks or starting even more than three for Bobby Ryan. So tough going for the Senators. On the good news, though, it looks like they're going to get right wing Mark Stone back, who had a lower body injury. He missed his 8th straight game on Tuesday. He could be back as early as Thursday. So a little bit of help coming back for the Senators. We saw
they could probably use a lot of help,
they
though.
They could certainly.
What they need is to start the season over.
Yeah. Mark Scheifele, though, in Winnipeg, they think he could play as early as Friday.
Yeah, and Mark Scheifele, what a huge part of the offense there. And we've talked about it before, Clayton. Everybody knows Patrick Laine, and I mean, he is a great player, one of the top goal scorers, one of the top young stars of the game. Scheifele might be the most valuable player on that team because Laine scores the goals, but Scheifele scores goals. He sets up goals. He plays a lot of different roles there. They have a lot of young talent there, but Scheifele's one of the guys that's been around a little bit longer than some of the other ones, and so he's got a little bit of veteran leadership in that too. He is a crucial part of that team. The nice news for them is that it really hasn't hurt him that much since he's been injured. So if he can come back early, just that much better for Winnipeg. Because Winnipeg is, they're still chasing Vegas. They have their eyes on the best record in the West.
And Winnipeg, a real tough team. You think if they get all of their pieces back, they're going to be a tough out for anyone who may see them in the playoffs. Playoffs on the mind of those in Denver with the Colorado Avalanche, and they lost Nate MacKinnon back on the 30th of January. He has returned. He started skating, but the coaching staff saying that he is far from ready to get back into game action.
Yeah, I remember he left that game January 30th with an upper body injury. Good news, like you said, he is back out on the ice. He skated the other day. They said they might let him out on the ice tomorrow, too. They're going to watch the doctor, see how he acts and everything. They're not going to rush him back, but still looks like he's going to be out another 2 to 2 to 4 weeks. If he's back on his skates and on the ice, I'm sure that Avalanche fans and their team hopes that it's going to be closer to the two, but he's a great young talent. You don't want to throw him out there too soon, so maybe discretion's a better part of valor. Maybe it goes closer to the 4 weeks. Bottom line, though, is this team has outperformed what most people thought they were going to at the start of the season. I would think as soon as he's ready to go, they probably want to get him back out there because they're looking at making a playoff run.
Mm-hmm. In Toronto, a bit of a scary moment yesterday for Frederik Andersen. He went out in the middle of the game, did not return. Curtis Mecolini finished it for him, but it looks like perhaps Freddie Andersen going to make it back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and Mike Babcock said he seems good, but we'll see what goes on tomorrow at practice. He got hit in the head by a skate by Corey Perry in the crease. He went down. It didn't look very good. But again, they said that he seemed pretty cognizant. Babcock said he had a conversation with him, which is certainly a good sign. So, but you know the concussion protocol and everything. They're going to make him check out a lot of things. But it sounds like he will be back definitely sooner than later. Maybe he won't miss any time.
Imagine that, Corey Perry involved in somebody getting injured and having to come out of the game. You know, it seems like he's involved in those things more times than not. And sometimes you wonder if somebody's just got a little bit of bad luck that they're always hurting somebody, or is it he's Corey Perry just the kind of guy that puts himself in dangerous situations?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, something like this hasn't happened to Corey Perry in days.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a tough go of it, though, for the Ducks, though. They got beat pretty badly by the Toronto Maple Leafs, and Randy Carlyle not happy after the game. He says, you score four goals, you got to win hockey games. Simple as that. We left our goaltender hanging in a few situations.
Yeah, and Ryan Getzlaff also chimed in after that loss. We're not going to beat anybody 8-7, I'll tell you that. Overall, as a group, we just have to play better. We have to be ticked off in here after these last three games, and the way we've played defensive hockey is abysmal, giving up over 5 goals a night. He's absolutely right. I mean,
yeah.
Anaheim is not known as the team that's going to outscore you in a shootout. They're the team that beats you up and wins low-scoring games. They're giving up 5 goals a night. That is very, very bad news for Anaheim Duck fans, but good news for everybody else in the Pacific right now.
You have to wonder about the Ducks. At what point does the season get too late for them? Because the narrative all along, Frank, on them has been, if we just get healthy, we're going to get our pieces back and we're going to put it together over the next couple of weeks. And those next couple of weeks were in November, and then that turned into December, and that turned into January. Now we're into February, and they still don't have a whole team.
Yeah, and again, it's a, you know, maybe this just isn't the season for them. Maybe it's not going to turn around. Maybe things won't go that well. They've lost 3 in a row, and here's another thing that you've got to be upset about if you're a Ducks fan, or at least if you're Mr. Raquel, one of their best players this year. Raquel has 3 goals and 5 assists in the last 4 games. He's got a four-game streak. They've lost the last 3 of those 4 games. So he's doing everything he can. Their goaltending and their defense is absolutely, as Getzlaff said, it's been abysmal. You can't have a guy scoring goals and usually multi-goals every night and throwing an assist as well and keep on losing those games. That's got to bring down the entire locker room.
Yeah, and seeing Anaheim struggle, Frank, doesn't it just break your heart?
It does something to my heart, but I think it makes it grow three sizes too big, bigger, not too small. So
I
it's
think
a
so.
Yes, I kind of enjoy it. You know what? When the Ducks are shot down, I'm all for it. All it means is it's dinner time.
Golden Knights are not immune to the injury bug, though. We saw Will Carrier miss the second and the third period in Washington. He will not play tonight. That is going to make some shifting around in the lines. Brendan Leipzig draws back in. Leipzig's going to play with Eakin and Lindbergh on the third line. Alex Tuck, who had some success with Pierre-Édouard Belmare and Ryan Carpenter, will draw in on the fourth line.
Yeah, I really like Alex Tuck, and I'll tell you what. I mean, anywhere Carpenter is, I mean, he gives 100% effort, as does Alex Tuck. It was nice to see Tuck get off the snide, get his 10th goal the other game, especially being the game-winning goal. I think they will work together. I know they're going to work hard. I don't know how the chemistry will be and everything, but these guys have done it before. Let's face it, this is going to be a very emotional start to tonight's game. But once the puck is dropped and the game gets underway and a couple shots are on goal, then it's another hockey game.
It is another hockey game. The Golden Knights been the story of the sports world. And, Frank, and sometimes we like to get ahead of ourselves, and I'm like you. I wonder why we can't just sit back and enjoy what the Golden Knights are doing. But people are already starting to talk about Seattle and the perhaps they'll be the 32nd team. And we're in a rush to get the new team in before we've even seen what the old expansion team can do. But Kerry Buchholz was asked about the success of Las Vegas and the successes of perhaps Seattle. And these were his thoughts.
About 90% of all the tickets that we've sold have been from the local community, the Las Vegas community, and that's really what these things are. Again, you guys have tremendous success. What the Seahawks have done, what the Mariners have done, the Sounders on the soccer side, you guys understand this, and that's really where it starts. And you got to have that success at the local level if you're going to make these things work.
And that's something that Vegas certainly had. They're trying to get that in Seattle as they go through the process of putting together this application.
Yeah, and Kerry Buchholz, one of three people from the upper offices at different NHL teams that are now firmly behind the move to Seattle and the expansion of Seattle. I think there's actually more than that right now. They just haven't all come out and officially said it. Let's face it. Look what Vegas did for the league, the storyline there through the entire sports world, and also the money in the pockets that they gave to every other team out there. They gave $500 million. Seattle is going to cost them $650 million. That means even Vegas gets a slice of that pie. So everybody gets richer if Seattle gets a team. And the way Vegas has worked out and shown that you can be competitive right off the bat, it'll be interesting to see when Seattle gets a team. I'm not even going to say if. I'm going to say when they get the team, if they tweak the expansion rules in a little bit. Because everybody was cool with it before the expansion draft. A lot of people not so cool with it right now and the success they've had.
They're not, and it's been wonderful, though, the success that they have, and I don't just say that because we're affiliated with them, but what the Golden Knights have been able to do have been able to crack some very difficult markets to crack in terms of national storylines, of them being not just on the the SportsCenters and the ESPNs and the Fox national affiliates, but cracking into shows like Good Morning America, like the Nightly News, when they want to have a feel-good story that's popping up and it's the Vegas Golden Knights.
Well, and not only that, but I mean, you literally have the entire world looking at them with the players from Sweden, from Finland, from Germany, with the Olympics coming up and everything. Hockey's big right now anyhow, but then you look at Vegas, and like you said, it's not just a Las Vegas story. It's an NHL story. It's a United States story. It's an international story, and it just keeps on getting bigger and bigger. If this team has success in the playoffs, every round that they potentially advance, it's just going to get that much even bigger. I mean, this is an absolute monster going on right now. Sorry, Colorado, but we're the snowball that's turned into the avalanche.
It certainly has. And was Vegas ready? That was the big question. That's the question. Is Seattle ready? And Kerry Buchholz answered that.
Absolutely. I mean, obviously, you're talking about one of the top markets in the country. You've got two other major professional teams there that do incredibly well. Again, the Sounders on the soccer side. You guys understand what professional sports does. And I think this is the perfect fit. The Sonics have been gone for almost a decade now, and I think it's the perfect time for the great new development with the changes that they're going to make at Key Arena and the investments that they're going to make. My understanding is it's several hundred million dollars in that facility, in a great community, in a market that's really thriving and growing, and it should be terrific.
Should be terrific indeed. And I think when you looked at the other possibilities of places to go, Quebec City, Salt Lake City, Houston, Seattle, would that be your choice, Seattle, out of those four?
Seattle does seem ready. Seattle makes sense because they're on the West Coast and they need another team on the West so they don't have to realign things. I know a lot of people have said, well, move Detroit back to the West and that. I don't think the NHL wants to do that right now. Seattle works because they do have an arena and everything ready. I personally think Houston is a hotbed for hockey, that they are chomping at the bit to get a team, but I think they still may get a team, maybe one where a new owner said that he's never going to move them, but when the contract's up, maybe they will. The ones that I actually kind of feel sorry for is Quebec, because mm-hmm. they love their hockey up there. I don't think they're going to be getting a team anytime soon, because they're not expanding past the 32 here for quite some time.
For quite some time. And Gary Bettman at the All-Star Game seemed reluctant to even consider any options there in Quebec City. They do already have the arena. They do have the passion of the fans there, that I'm sure they could easily raise the amount of money and the tickets that would be necessary in order to do that. But I feel bad for the folks of Quebec City. But I'm with you. I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Houston, larger market, a little bit further away from another NHL city.
Yeah, the one thing that is interesting about that is that Vancouver is one of the teams on board with them coming up there. And you thought if there's one team that might complain, it would be Vancouver because of the territorial thing. But they're actually on board with saying Seattle's a great place. We go down there for concerts and different things up there. But they want the NHL there because I think they feel it'll be an immediately built-in rivalry.
Yeah, it would be. And, it, you know, I guess there were those question marks when there were two teams and then three in the New York area. Could it support two teams in L.A. as well? So two teams in the Seattle-Vancouver area. There is precedent for that working in the past. When we come back, we're going to take a look at a hockey player or a hockey coach did a pretty amazing thing. We'll check that out on the other side of the break. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Golden Knights hockey in the Valley. And welcome back. Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a game day. Pre-game show at 3:30, puck drop at 4 o'clock. Golden Knights and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Clayton Hamilton here along with Frank Harnish at Born and Raised on Warm Springs and Cimarron. Come on by and say hello. And we are pleased to be joined by T.C. Martin, the doctor. Little cross talk, and we felt like we needed to have you on because we know today is Tuesday, a terrible Tuesday indeed on the TC Martin Show, but we got a little good news for you.
Let's hear it. I can always use some good news.
A group of the Atlanta Gladiators was getting a post-game meal at a restaurant along the St. John's River in Jacksonville after Thursday night's win when they heard someone shouting for help. Derek Nesbitt, the captain of the Gwinnett ECHL hockey team, so they were just sitting there chilling, eating out on the patio, and they thought they heard somebody yelling for help, so they kind of got up and looked around, and they said they saw a man in the water in the St. John's River. The man was going under a couple times. He was drowning. So they were looking for something to throw him to try to save him, couldn't find anything, so one of their assistant coaches jumped in the water. He said, "If I didn't, I'm sure another guy would have." He was maybe 100 yards out, but it was hard to tell because it was dark. Brady Lessenring jumped in the water because he saw this man drowning, swam out to him, said he thought he used up most of his energy getting out there. He maybe went a little bit hard, couldn't see because it was dark, but got the man. He was freaking out a little bit and said, "Okay, just calm down. I'm going to get you to shore." Started swimming back to shore, and all of a sudden his old shoulder injury from his playing days got up to him a little bit. Said he got about 20 feet from the shore, but then the other guys kind of jumped in and helped pull the guy out. The man was dragged out of the river. He was naked. He was intoxicated. And some of the players said that they saw him jump in the river down at the hotel where they were staying at. He was told people apparently he decided he was going to try to swim across the river, but got caught in a current and was getting washed down. But luckily for him, these guys were having the dinner, and they saved his life. Now, this was not the first time that Mr. Lessenring had jumped in that river. Once earlier in the season, they were in the town, and the team was in a slump, so they all decided to jump in the river together. He said he realized afterward how dirty that river was. He had to basically kind of throw away his suit because they couldn't even clean it. He said he took a few showers to get the dirt off. It crossed his mind when he saw the man there, but he figured a guy's life was at stake, so he guessed he was going to get dirty again and took off his shoes and jumped on in and saved him.
You sure he wasn't an Eagles fan? That's what it sounds like to me, you know, a little post-celebration.
How many times have you been in the South and been naked in a river?
Probably.
Over-unders 3.5.
Yeah, I'll take the under, definitely the under, yeah.
Yeah. Athletic trainer Aaron Rice did say, "I'm glad I didn't have to do CPR. I was expecting to. We kept asking Brady if he needed help, but he got close, and we pulled them both out. The last 20 feet was a bit of a struggle, but they got him out of the river." And, I guess this coach swam in it, but Philadelphia fans apparently eat it.
Yeah, this is true. This is true.
Yeah. What's coming up on the T.C. Martin Show?
Great segue. Great transition there as we talk about some of the post-Philadelphia Eagles fans celebrations on our terrible Tuesday portion that we have here. So we'll touch upon that. We're going to go straight through commercial-free basically today.
Nice.
The T.C. Martin Show. And then we're going to come right back to you guys with the pregame show at 3:30. Can hardly wait for the puck to drop a little bit after 4 o'clock as the Golden Knights take on the Penguins. So touch upon that, and you guys are more than welcome to hang out, participate in Terrible Tuesday in the show today. I like to say abbreviated show, but jam-packed, rock and roll, can hardly wait, and good to be here at Born and Raised, and good to be here with you guys, too.
All right, we'll stick on around. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.